Bill DeYoung here. It's Arts Alive, the podcast of the St. Pete Catalyst, back with you again today. My guest is Mr. Ward Smith, who is the co-founder and producing artistic director of the Off Central on First Avenue South in St. Petersburg, Florida. It is a theater. It is a fine theater, and we're going to tell you all about it today. Hello, Ward.
Hey, Bill. Thanks for having me back, man.
Ward Smith is an actor. He's a director. He's a comedian. He's actually a really funny guy, you know. We don't have enough of them on this show here, so, you know, you want to tell us a few jokes. And he does impressions. This guy can probably juggle. You get him drunk.
No, we don't juggle. You know, I was doing, you're Mr. St. Pete guy, too, with your, I love, and people listening to this, I mean, the Catalyst, I love your vintage St. Pete, your historian that you are for St. Petersburg from the Aquatarium, the old days and Web City days. And
well, you grew up in St. Pete, just like I did.
Yes, and it's great to see that stuff. And when you bring that up to the Catalyst, it's really wonderful. Yeah.
The Off Central seats, what, 42, 43
43, people? 43, and 50 with a shoehorn. Yeah.
Okay. Have you had to do that before?
A couple times. Most of the times with it, I'd like to have that problem. But the way it works out, most of the shows, and have you seen too, we have the space to go. But sometimes it keeps it right in that space that we are there in, and that seems to be just enough. And when you have the odd nights, and thank you very much for helping me, you know, and to publicize the place, on a slow night, it's hard to put 30 people in a place.
Understood.
Like that, you know, and so it's everything I can do to put all 43 in.
Well, see, you know, I don't want to say it's a niche thing, but it kind of is a niche thing.
I think it is.
It's what they call a black box theater. Right. Very small, very intimate. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to ask you, before we talk about 1959 Pink Thunderbird, which is ending this weekend, folks, and we're going to get to that in a second, and you really should see it because it's very, very funny. How do you program this? I mean, you can't bring in Les Mis,
right?
In this spot. I mean, there must be limitations to what you can do. Small casts,
sure.
That's beneficial to you, though.
Yeah.
I would think
it has to be. It keeps the overhead low.
Well,
overhead that I have, I have to keep low, and it's the overhead that I have. You know, it's like cost on the average $5,000, $6,000, $6,500, $7,500 to put on a 2-person show, a 1-person show like yours. Show like that one hand.
Oh, Mayday.
For Mayday that you did. Yeah. To put that up, we still have production costs that go into it to give some quality behind.
Well, we put all the money into the wardrobe, I think, for Mayday.
Right. Really, by the nice way, you'd be jacket. Happy to see that set that you used for Mayday, we still use it.
I saw a piece of it in Lone Star.
We put the chain link over the top of it. I used the frame. I used it in another show prior to this, so we've gotten my money's worth.
You were in the one with the gardens. I saw it in that show, too.
Right. I've got my use out of the chain link fence because I got too much chain link fence. So I got
that's what you do in theater, but the people out there have no idea what we're talking about.
Yeah, theater operators, you accumulate stuff.
But I mean, do you look for specific things that maybe have been, you know, off Broadway or haven't been produced?
It's a combination of everything. When people that come into the orbit, other actors or artists, and you talk to them, when they see the space, they go, oh, you know what would look good in here?
Uh-huh.
You know what would work in here? And right away, if not even knowing that you're looking at two-handers, small cast, single set stuff, small cast, two-handers, two people, you know, four people tops, you know.
Well, the
cast of six is probably really pushing in my space.
I've seen one or two of those.
Right.
And that looked a little crowded.
It
was a crowded house, as they say.
Right.
But was Stephen Ray directs this one?
Yes.
Is he the one that brought these shows to your attention?
Well, when they first, you know, came up together, he brought Lone Star to my attention. He said, you ever thought of doing this? This would work in here. And one of the things. It's a simple set. This
could
work in here.
That's what I thought when you said that.
Yeah, you know, and and I went, oh, okay. So I flummed through it, and I had, you know, at least, I think, first season and a half programmed already.
Mm-hmm.
And I this would be good, but I still waiting to hear on this other thing. So I'm always looking for material. Get to this. And so a couple seasons later, I was flipping it through again. I said, this would look good. And I needed a comedy kind of. And then Laundry and Bourbon came around, the ladies' portion of it.
Yeah.
I went, hey, you know, I can kind of, when it came to the rights, if I produce them together, it's this amount. And I went, okay, they both work. It's one show.
It's okay. One show. Well, let's talk about what this is. James McClure has these two one-act plays that are set in Maynard, Texas.
Right.
And I'm guessing this is, what, early 70s?
It takes place in 1975. 4.
There's a lot of references to Vietnam.
Right, and being back for 2 years, characters being back for 2 years.
So. Okay, well, the plays are, they're two one-acts, but they are, in fact, related in that the characters, they talk about each other.
Yeah, two of the ladies in the first play, the first act is three women in, in Laundry and Bourbon, and two of the ladies in that are the spouse of two of the guys in Lone Star in Act 2.
Right.
And so there's a lot of references, and hence the 1959 Pink Thunderbird.
Right, that's the common denominator.
That's the common, and that's the car. That's my character Roy. He's he was the cock of the block when he had that car. And he was the dude in this small little Manor, Texas shoehorn town.
Talk to me about Roy. As you said, you play Roy and your brother Ray. You essentially the two guys. Right. There's another character which comes in later, but it's essentially you and your brother. Right. Tell me about Roy. Give us the one after 909 on Roy here.
But he's this guy from small town Texas. He was big stuff in high school. Had a lot of these dreams, big car, all the girls. A lot of girls. Had a big sports fan, but it was the first guy to, from this town to go to Vietnam. And got shot, came back, kind of a hero. He's trying to adjust. And he's one of those many, many guys, unfortunately, that came back from being deployed overseas in combat situation and just having a hard time adjusting and getting started. You see, back in those days, there was no, getting back into the society. Mm-hmm. Guys are coming back from Nam, being spat upon, called baby killers. Now there's all types of re-entry, veterans assistance programs, guys coming back. I still don't think there's enough. That's a different story.
Right.
Roy, that in that time, that wasn't available. That's why he's dealing with his PTSD in a way. He's
an angry guy.
He's getting back angry at the war, angry at himself. He wants to go back to find, he gave up a lot. He got drafted. My backstory, he did, as a lot of guys did during that time.
Yeah.
And so he got shot up, coming back, got bitter. Left a lot of friends, good friends back there that probably died, and he's bitter about the war going. A lot of conscious reasons, personal reasons. Now he's back, and now he wants, there's a line in the show, it's like and he says, when you want to go back to a place in your mind, you want it to be how you remember it, not how it is.
Yeah.
So when you're coming back to, and he says, when I sitting in some foxhole getting fired at, I promised myself I'd rather be sitting behind that old bar and getting drunk when I get the hell out of here, wouldn't you? Hell, any place but here kind of a thing.
That's exactly what I thought. He his version of coming back to Maynard is, this is the life I used to have here.
Right.
And he talks about it constantly.
Just my car and just sitting out back in Maynard and having a drink and watching go by. And just the simplest of stuff. Innocence is what that car was. That there car's my youth, he says. He got more tail in the back seat of that car than anybody in town. So.
He did say that. And let's reiterate that this is a comedy. And Roy and Ray, the banter is priceless between the two of them.
Yeah, it's got shades of Mice and Men type of those characters.
Well, yeah.
Ray and Roy. I mean, Ray's, he doesn't have any issues. A little slow, maybe. Mm. But still has some wisdom in that slowness.
He wants to please his brother.
Sure he does. He looks up to him. He looks up to him. And everybody in this town does.
Yeah.
He went to Vietnam. He wanted to go to Vietnam. He thought it was romantic. But they wouldn't let me in because he had an issue, upstairs, so to speak.
Yeah.
So it's – but he would have gone.
What is it that Roy says? It's like, Mom told me.
They think he had brain damage.
Yeah.
And then is it really – it may be kind of sort of – they didn't know how to express it back then. These people came from this area of Texas where, their book learning was limited. And you figure during that time in areas of this country where it's either you should have got off the pot, either jail or the army. I mean, you didn't have a trade. You didn't go to college. You didn't have anything in front of you, any kind of a skill or any kind of a job opportunity. And this was, flashback 1966-67, he got the car. You do the timeline in the show when he's probably got in the 50s, he saved for it. It's a 59 and 61 when he got the car. 67, That great trip, when he, the Bozeman City trip.
Oh, the Bozeman City trip. Oh,
that's probably one last ride before he probably had to report for duty.
You
I
get
guess.
Like beat up by the Louisiana Mafia or something?
Yes, you got, in a fight. Yeah, don't ever get in a fight with any Louisiana Dagos, as you call them. So,
and what a guy.
Another guy. I mean, it's, oh, yeah. And, you know, him having, and, oh, and, you know, picking up all kinds of characters in Bozeman City. What is it? Have you ever been to Bozeman City, Louisiana? I mean, if it's, I guess it sounds like it makes New Orleans look like, you know, a trip to the Mormon Tabernacle Village in Utah, because it's Bozeman City is the largest strip of nightclubs between Vegas and Miami
this
Beach.
This is a real place, then.
Bozeman City, Louisiana is. I mean, back in the, now I'm sure it's probably all gentrified like downtown St. Peter's,
yeah.
Or, you know, all kind of corporatized, but, and people's probably getting trashed
probably
in Bozeman
like
City.
Probably like Branford, Missouri now,
right.
Or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, back in the days, it was pretty seedy and grimy,
oh, yeah.
And
yeah, right,
perfect.
Right.
You know, that's
perfect for Roy.
That's what he says, you know, teenage prostitutes, you know, drunk driving, things that make life worth living.
Yeah,
hey, buddy. You know, hey, dog. I mean, and that's for fun to play. I can get a little, you can get a little carried away. I mean, with this type of character, you can get a little over the top. And playing a drunk is fun. It's a challenge because you can't make him sloppy, and I can't make him, you can't.
Yeah.
Foster Brooks, he is a little, you know, that's a different thing. This and sustain it in. Without falling down drunk, it's an exercise in rhythm and inner clockness.
No, the inner clockness. I think you may have just coined a phrase. Michael Gregory is his
Michael
name.
Gregory,
who plays Ray. Now the two of you had a great sort of chemistry.
Well, that was there. That was apparent right from the read.
Yeah,
you know, and we were reading it. I see. Ideally, these parts are for guys like 27 to 32, guys had really kind of, you know, in that youthful days, just gotten back from them, can't get started yet.
Yeah.
I'm 60 years old. Mike's older than me.
I was going to say, you guys are a couple of old codgers.
up there doing it. And the guy who plays Cletus is kind of, you know, Danny Tawara, he's in the age group of what the ideal cast room would be.
No, yeah.
And based
he's the
on
third
the,
guy,
the women
Cletus.
Have to match us
yeah.
in terms of at the by the woman Debbie Jonas who plays Elizabeth Roy's wife. You have to buy that person is married to the other person. The audience has to buy it.
Well, let's talk about Laundrie and Bourbon for a minute. You know, Debbie Jonas, of course, is a wonderful.
Yeah, she's a great.
She
find.
Was in Rashida Speaking,
right? The first show we did,
2021.
Yes, sir.
So she's done quite a bit, and she just directed
Alan and Fully Committed.
Fully Committed. That was a good one too.
That was great.
Alan came. We did one of these with Alan for that show. That
I heard
was
that.
Fun.
I heard that. That was fun.
And Debbie's great. And I don't know the other two ladies here in that.
They're new to me. They're very very new in this audition process. Both Amanda Kay and Amanda C. Amanda Capello.
It was
Amanda
the Amanda Kronos. Sisters. Right. I remember writing that down somewhere.
Right. Yeah. It's and they couldn't be more delightful and just on time and just firing. And well, Amanda Kronos, former Miss Lakeland, by the way, we have a former beauty queen.
Oh, there
so
she, you go.
She's from Uptown and Amanda Capello. She's been playing violin since she was six. She's quite a fiddler violinist. She's
Look at
a
that.
These people come out of the woodwork, and it's wonderful. They hear about the audition. They study up in Clearwater.
Uh-huh.
Well, Amanda worked with Steve in another production that he had. Stephen Ray, the director, in a different production.
Amanda?
I'm sorry, the,
Amanda One
sorry.
Or Amanda Two?
Amanda K. Amanda Kronos. So he put the feelers. Hey, I'm directing a show. You come out for this, and then Danny and Amanda Capello, they study at a studio up in Clearwater, north of Clearwater. They had heard about these auditions, and they had done a scene in their scene study from this. So Amanda Capello came in ready to think, pow, it's like, where the hell have you been? Well, I went up and been up north, and I heard about you guys. I thought I'd come down and give it a try. You're in. Damn.
Isn't that nice, though? I mean, I see that I usually don't stutter this much. I make myself laugh. How stupid is that? I have been to, you know, all the theater companies around here, and everyone has their strong suits. Everyone does certain things really well. And you see the same people a lot in some of them. It's like this is their company.
Right.
And they're all wonderful actors, but it's like, I like what you do. As you were just talking about, These people were never in your orbit.
Right, and now they are. And it's like, please, here's a, you know, we're having, please come around for next audition.
Yeah,
please,
right. Here's now my business card.
Now that we know each other exists,
yeah.
You know, how far does it take to you to get here? I mean, how far do you travel? Is it hard for you to get here for a rehearsal and stuff? Would you come again?
Can I send a car for you?
Right. Yeah. Well,
you want to talk to your sister about putting that in the budget?
Well, yeah,
you know?
Maybe so. It depends. If it comes, if I can get Lin-Manuel Miranda. She'd do it.
Oh, yeah, okay.
The thing is, she has that, I mean, having that kind of faith.
Doesn't he, like, live in Connecticut or something?
Well, the thing is, I don't care. If it's that type of devotion that she has with me, if to get it done.
Your sister are partners in the company.
Yeah, and she was the one who suggested a long time ago, why don't you look for a place? So she got tired of driving over to Tampa to see me.
Yeah.
And at the small little black box that I had.
What was that called?
That was the Heather.
The Heather.
And that was an offshoot from the Performance Studio Workshop that was a scene study class for the Cafe Lonely.
So that closed and you started looking around.
Well, I was still looking back then.
Yeah.
You know, and it was, oh, yeah, sure, just find a place. Yeah, just find a building. Right, sure. Even though we could, there was a time you could get a building pretty cheap around here, but we'd still have to spend, you know, God knows how much to outfit it, lights and, you know, equipment, and I wouldn't know where to begin and hire a consultant and, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, and then this thing just opened up and it fell into our lap and here we are.
And it was an acting studio. It was Andy Matheny's place. So you had the seats, you had the lights.
Right. We just did a lot of put the eyebrows on it, as Frank Zappa would say, and clean up the place, did some baseboards, some painting, some throw pillows, the margaritas, the right company, you know, fresh coat of paint.
Well, so
redid the Johns and bathrooms and cleaned them up and turned it from more of a classroom situation to more of a theater where more and more people would come.
Well, that's what it was. I mean, they would do their scene work in there for the class.
Yes.
And that isn't that why the seats are kind of raised the way they are?
Yeah, it was semi set up.
Yeah,
you know, for ready to go.
It's very unique. It's a very unique way to see theater.
Yes.
And what I was going to say before we move on to something else was we were talking about the people who are new to Orbit, but I've seen Roxanne Fay work over there.
Well, she's now in the permanent role. She's like an artistic associate.
Okay.
So to have her in more and more of a consulting business, and more than just that.
The show that the two of you were in was
Native Gardens.
Gardens. It had the thing from Mayday.
Right. The fence, the set piece from that.
But Roxanne works a lot.
Yeah,
Roxanne
she's
in Connecticut right now. I think I heard that. Yeah,
she's doing cabaret in Connecticut.
After
just doing this Queen of Leanne over in the job site, where she was just doing this traumatic, heavy.
Did you see that? I was
in rehearsals for this. I couldn't get over
it. It was really good.
I heard she was fantastic, as always she is.
My point is to keep blowing smoke at you, Roxanne, is that she's really busy and very professional and very good, but she likes working.
Right. And to have people of that caliber, that quality, to want to be in our arbor. She directed your piece, Mayday, when you first came that.
We did that at 620.
Right.
The first
and
version.
Then you did it over at the Mar as well, too. So to have, and you too.
No, we didn't do it at the Mar. We did it at 620 and then at your place. We didn't do it at the Mar.
I thought you, okay.
No, nope, there's only two.
Forgive me.
But, you know, it's old news.
But to have you now as you as well in our orbit, people that are just like here, ooh, that they like what we're doing. People want to hang in our sandbox. And that's, you know, you can't put a price on that. When people like what you're doing and want to be involved because they like the intimacy of the work and how I guess we work cleanly. I don't want to jerk anybody around. I take care of the talent. I want to pay somebody a respectable talent. I can't pay him a lot.
Yeah.
I can't pay him a union fee. Based on my size, I'm only 43 seats. If I was 400 seats, that's a different pay scale.
Right.
If I was 100 seats, it's a different pay scale.
Let me put it to you this way, Ward. Why do you do it?
Well, my first gut reaction, and I caught myself because I don't want to sound like an arrogant prick, because I can.
Oh, go ahead.
Okay, because I can. After all this time, after 40 years in this business, my sister, my partner, is, you know, have the means and the infrastructure to, and I probably have the maturity now at 56, 57. When I started, I'm 60. I've been doing that 3 years at this place.
Yeah, 3 years.
That I probably couldn't handle it when I was younger. I had kids. I was smaller. I probably, you know, I wouldn't know where to begin if this opportunity came into my life then. I probably could have blown it. I got to watch it now. I still could blow it. I don't want to blow it. But I guess, you know, there comes a little bit of maturity in that time frame. And now having this you know, this in my lap, come in front of me, present itself right now is at this point in my life, it's why do I do it? Because I'm blessed, because I can, because I have the opportunity to do it now. I can do it now. It's like, oh, and I can do more than just participate. I can call the shots. I can pick up the phone and say, hey, Bill, you want to do something? I can say, Roxanne, would you like to do something? I just had a meeting yesterday with Giles Davis. You know the great Giles Davis?
Oh, yeah, the other great actor.
The other great actor. Yeah. We locked something in with Roxanne Fay, and I can break it. This is exclusive for our Halloween thing we're doing in October. This is going to very much structured like this show, where it's a one act, two one acts with one umbrella. It's going to be Tales of Mystery and Imagination, and the first act is going to be a one man version. Roxanne's directing both of them. It's this Blake Smolin. Blake Smolin is going to be
great.
He's going to do the one man version. Ichabod Crane, that Sleepy Hollow.
Oh yeah,
Intermission. And then Giles is doing Poe, all works of Edgar Allan Poe.
That's fantastic.
This
is exactly what I'm talking
about. Right, this
though.
Little stuff that just came together. I had lunch with Giles yesterday and said, you want to do something in October? So, well, this is when I got – I thought he only had like a weekend available.
Mm-hmm.
And he's doing other stuff because he's always busy.
Oh, yeah.
So if I can snare him for something, I get him for whatever I could.
You see, that's
we sat down and he said, I got more time than I got – I can do nine shows. I can – so it's now – It's a feature thing. It's going to be an originally produced type of thing. We're going to develop. Roxanne's going to direct it. I got to tell my people, hey, Alan, can we do some sets? Or, hey, Mike Horn, some lights. I got a job for you.
Does Mike know about this yet?
Maybe he's scooped on it right now. Hopefully it's – and you keep it simple so it's a lot of blues and reds and whatever color scheme is going to be. Everyone knows the space that's involved right now, knows the limitations that we're in. So they're like, okay, this works in this space.
Yeah.
You know, one-man show, solo performance, work in my space.
I think certain theater people find that sort of challenge really, like, kind of thrilling.
I think so, too, because I think for the actor, I can only speak for myself, I can feel it more as a cinematic, you know, it's a film shoot. It's close to you.
Yeah.
I mean, as far away as I probably am in my space, it's probably as I'm far away to you. I'm still pretty close from the audience.
Yeah.
So we can still work, you know, this scene in here would be a great set if we were doing talk radio.
Or the podcast
studio.
Yeah,
this set, if we were doing, you know, like a talk radio. I often
picture myself as Howard Stern sitting here.
It's either that or play Misty for me. Remember the Clint Eastwood one? Jill St. John or something?
More like WKRP. Right. Listen, you do a comedy series, and you still do stand-up.
Coming up after
you've got
all this stuff.
Something in May, you've got a comedy thing. Tell me about that one.
Quick little plug out, Francine Wolf comes up.
Francine's show is coming
up. That's another something where I like to be in this position where she volunteers for us, and she's also an actress. And she's been working on the show for a long time, and she had it in the gate. COVID came. She got kind of sidelined. She's done it a couple times. But to give her some more breathing space – to kind of flesh it out and realizing it a bit more. And I want to be a venue where new artists can realize their work like that. So
yeah,
she's coming up. She's got October 26th, 27th, 28th of April. So she's got three nights, one woman show. It's called Please Don't Tell My Kids.
That's what it's called.
All these great stories that I think her daughter's okay with some of them. Her son is like, I don't want to know. So,
perfect.
The grown children know, so they still don't want to know. So, and that's coming up. And then in May, every Saturday in May, it's stand-up. So,
great.
And that's me and three other comics every Saturday night.
That's helpful. You're doing all of them?
Yeah, I'm hosting.
Yeah.
So I got to get out next week after this show closes. I'm going to get around to a couple of breweries. I got to break in. If I could do 5 minutes every Saturday night, that's 20 minutes. So I got to get a new 20 minutes.
Oh, boy.
Somehow.
How do you do that? I mean, I think stand-up comics probably are thinking about it 24/7.
Well, as I'm going along, as I'm at the studio, I'm in that place where I can work.
Even as you're working.
Right, if I'm studying my lines or something, like, and put something on the way and listen to the radio, listen to the news or whatever's going on, or jot down a little note. And I have this little bank, you know, of lines, you know,
It's like the Bob Hope card catalog.
That's what Joel Walsh and calls it, like when he puts his ideas in a shoebox, and every time it's time to do an album, he pulls out the shoebox and sees what sticks and what goes together. So it was at the people looking at the eclipse the other day. Hell, I went to Brandon Mitsubishi and saw four of them. Boom. So that's, you know.
Yeah. If it's, where do I buy a ticket, Ward?
Rather than the off-central diagram. Rather than posting it and having it, you know, be in the hacking universe, see if you can put a couple of them together and string them together. And I have to do just 5 minutes. I just have to be like, it's just kind of keeping that muscle together. And then I've got three other fine professionals every Saturday night right behind me where I just facilitate and go, but enough about me. Here's some really funny people.
And you're not likely to get like booed or egged in your own place.
Well, well, if you don't want to put it
get
back,
out.
Right. I'll charge you more to get out.
That's
kind of.
Right.
That's one thing you want them to show up. It's like if I can't even draw 43 people at my own place, it's like I'm having a party and no one's coming over. It's like it's a birthday party. It's like
comedy shows do really well. I understand
they do great because it's again. I mean, the comics. Well, first they look at it, it's like, gee, I mean, one comic said, gee, I didn't know I'd be playing to a group tonight. You know.
Right.
So, but there are home theaters that are bigger than my space, man.
Yeah.
In somebody's home up over on Paso Grill, but. They once 43 people, 50 are in there laughing tight, and it's packed, and they're rocking. The room vibrates.
Yeah, I get that.
And the comic goes, "Wow, this is so cool!"
Yeah,
and I love this place. It can be deceiving. It's a small room, but everyone's there, and everyone's, you know, pulling them back.
That's cool. And you know, on the other side of that coin, being in the audience for some of the shows that I've seen, they're like a number.
Right.
Of course, that's the only one I can think of right now. But there were several that were really. Native Gardens was cool. You know, I think I've seen everything you've done.
Thank you. Yeah.
Very
good.
The one I missed was Becca McCoy's, and I still hear how great that was.
That was wonderful. Yeah, was wonderful.
You know, but I know that feeling. You know, there is something about being part of an audience that's like vibing with what the people on the stage are doing, whether it's a little acoustic concert somewhere at
and
Craftsman
you can
House
see or... that you're close enough where you can see the enthusiasm. I mean, it's great. You can see great venues. You can go to Mojave. You can go to Palladium. You can see great concerts. You can see Sting with the orchestra and be in the third row and be moved and be wonderful, you know. And it has its own communication with audience, artist relationship.
Yeah.
But in my little space and – well, I guess when the artist can sense that, when the artist knows that they're making that connection, that's why the artists do what they do. Why do I do it? Because I like to make this connection with the human race and tell stories.
Mm-hmm.
When you can hear people this close, like as I am to you, I'm on the stage, you're in the front row.
Yeah.
It's this close.
Oh, yeah.
And you can see, the audience can see if there's been any bullshit going on, if there's untruthful moments. So that's why the acting has to be pretty good.
Yeah, you can see solid reactions.
When you hear the audience go... This closer. Oh my God, they can do it.
Aside from the October, horror show, Poe Shenanigans, et cetera, and
what's coming in December? I can break it now, right now.
Okay, I mean, do you have the whole?
It just came together now with the Poe show, for lack of a better term, with the October. That's the spooky Halloween
tell me about,
block.
What's your season? What's it look like?
Okay, right now we ramp up with. After we do the May, the comedy stuff, we're in January, on June, and July, the kids take over Big Break Youth Stage.
Yeah.
Has a kids camp in there in the afternoon. Bill Levengood is going to be teaching adult classes on Saturdays and Mondays, like in July.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of our education outreach is at the summertime.
Yeah.
And then we'll start rehearsals in August. We're doing a collaborative with Outcast Theater called Orange, and they're going to start rehearsing in our space around August, I think, and that's going to go up in August. And then Blackbird, I'll be doing that. Alan Mone's directing that.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have auditions coming up in May for that.
Okay.
And that's going to be in September. After that, then October is
the Poe Show.
and then after that is, and then Roxanne, who's directing the Poe Show.
Yeah.
And once that's up, she's going to be starting The Sound Inside, which is a two-hander. Pretty kind of a creepy kind of, and Debbie Yonis is directing that.
Oh, that's good.
And that's going up in November.
Yeah.
And now get this, kids, scooped up in December, Alan Mone Jr. and I are doing A Tuna Christmas. Now, a lot of logistics, a lot of moving parts in that one.
1959 Pink Thunderbird by James McClure, which is two one-act plays. One is called Laundry and Bourbon. The other one's called Lone Star, and it goes through this weekend. Sunday is the last day.
3 o'clock. Yep.
3 o'clock matinee. The Off Central is at 2260 First Avenue South. I knew I had it in there somewhere. You can find tickets at theoffcentral.com. You can call them. You probably get Ward if you call it right at the right time.
Right.
We are at the end of our tether here, my friend, but such a pleasure to speak to you.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you very much. I brought you some popcorn and a Babe Ruth and some Lone Star. You know. And for the folks that are listening, and there's the part of the show where this is a wonderful flavor combination. There's a way to eat a Baby Ruth and drink a beer, and you have to have, because you got the sweet and the sour, you have to have the salt. You have that gutter in between it.
Yeah.
So Baby Ruth first, then the popcorn, then the Lone Star.
But beer is sour.
Right. Cold and sour. So it's the sweet, the salty, and then the sour. Kind of when you do it, when you actually try it, it's not too bad. You know, however, I think there's a different combination. I think Miller High Life and Doritos, I think that's the best.
Well, you know, this will all make sense if you go to see the shows. This is part of Lone Star, which is, of course, paired together with Laundry and Bourbon. Go to see it at the Off Central. It is on stage Friday night, Saturday night.
And Sunday. And Friday, Sunday. Saturday, 8 o'clock, and Sunday at 3.
It's the offcentral.com. Never call it the Off Center, even though it is a little off-center.
Yeah. What are you going to do?
The offcentral.com. Ward Smith, thanks for being here,
Thank
pal.
Thank you, Bill. Appreciate it.
Man. See you soon, man.
From stpetecatalyst.com.